Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Hey there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Vincent Caldoni.
And it's time for another ass-kicking mystery, I think. What do you think, Vincent?
I'm down.
Okay, well, this week we're taking a break actually from all the bloody, gory stories that we've been talking about for the last several episodes. I don't know if you noticed that we took a dark turn there. So this week we're going to talk about a legendary lost treasure, and yeah. I think I have to agree. This is a good one. This is
it's pretty interesting.
It's an interesting mystery, you know. I'll talk about a few disconnected series of events in California in 2013. A couple found some rusty old cans buried on their property, which were filled with gold coins, worth millions of dollars, of course. Mm-hmm. In 1993, some treasure hunters found a glass jar in Oklahoma that was filled with silver coins that had been minted in the 19th century. In Baltimore, in 1934, two boys found a trove of gold coins buried in the basement of an old house. So what do all these lucky treasure finds have in common? Well, it's believed by many, or at least some, or at least a few, but I don't know. These were all once part of a mega hoard of gold and silver. And in fact, this might be the mother of all treasures. And it's unique in the annals of treasure in that it was hidden in many places instead of just one spot. And we're talking, of course, about the treasure of the Knights of the Golden Circle.
So what were the Knights of the Golden Circle? Well, it was a secret society founded in the U.S. in 1854 by people sympathetic to the Southern cause. So they were really into slavery. It had a few famous people in its ranks, including, not surprisingly, John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
Although it's suspected that Knights were actually the moving force behind the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So that's kind of interesting.
It is, yeah. Another famous member was Jesse James, possibly.
After the end of the Civil War, the Knights began accumulating gold and silver with the goal of financing a brand new shiny Civil War, just a new one that we can die in. Mm-hmm. They didn't keep it all in one place, though, of course. They were smart, and they buried it all around the U.S. with secret signs and symbols inscribed on rocks and trees that would help an initiate find each particular stash. But the signs would be totally meaningless to anyone else.
Yeah.
There are, of course, treasure hunters all over the U.S. busy looking for the Knights of the Golden Circle treasure. And so, you know, should we expect more of it to be found? Well, stay tuned. We're going to talk about it.
Maybe. So before we go too deeply into the treasure stuff, though, let's we'll give you a little bit of background on the Knights of the Golden Circle, which we're going to call the KGC, then alternatively here. As we mentioned earlier, the Knights were founded in 1854 for the purpose of defending the rights of Southern slaveholders. The original founder was a man named George Bickley, who was a big-talking huckster who I've heard described as, quote, vocationally adrift, unquote, which I believe means unemployed. he found his niche, I guess. He modeled this new secret society after the Freemasons. And, of course, the Knights Templar from, you know, hence the name.
It's a Freemason for people who want to own other people.
I guess so, yeah. So not quite so Freemason? I don't know.
the enslaved Masons. They had the perfect name. They didn't even go for it. They could have been the slavery Masons.
I know. Well, and as some of you may know, slavery was controversial in the U.S. from the beginning. And the abolitionists had been working since day one to get rid of it. And slave owners were getting increasingly pessimistic about the continuation of their business model. So what was needed from their point of view was to increase the political power of the Southern states.
The early purpose of the Knights of the Golden Circle was to increase the South's power against the North by expanding Southern slaveholding territory into what they called a Golden Circle of Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. And the plan was to use private paramilitary forces to establish control over these areas, creating an empire of slave-owning states with a greater population and larger economy. The Golden Circle would have a lot more clout in Washington, and they'd be able to tell all those pesky abolitionists to go pound sand. These private paramilitary guys that went down there, this really did happen. They did try to go to Nicaragua and Honduras and Costa Rica to enslave people down there and Belize, and they all got killed because they were big dorks. And in fact, their leader got shot in the head by a little boy in Costa Rica, basically ending their reign of terror or whatever you want to call it. And he died shortly after that. And that little boy is a hero in Costa Rica.
So the there was I think that they were just hoping that there'd be enough people down in these countries that would be interested in their proposition. Turns out there was less interest than they had believed. Their initial goal was to conduct their initial operations in northern Mexico, but the leadership of the organization said that they would comply with U.S. neutrality laws and that they would not invade Mexico unless they were actually invited by Mexican sympathizers. But the invitation never came. So the Golden Circle's imperial plans kind of fizzled out.
Yeah. But not the Knights.
No, not the Knights.
No, they were still going strong. When Abraham Lincoln was elected president in 1860, the Knights changed their mission to promoting secession from the Union and reorganized on a decentralized model led by regimental commanders at the state level, which played a role later in decentralizing the stashing of their treasure.
Yeah, made sense. They went to a sort of a cell model, you know, where like, you know, one cell didn't necessarily know everything about the other cell.
Right. So you can't just bust the ringleaders and then have the whole thing fall apart. Also, during the lead up to the Civil War, the Knights became more aggressive and they used intimidation tactics against Southern Unionists. They also began the paramilitary seizure of arsenals and forts to be used to supply as yet unexisting Confederate army. After the Civil War began, the Knights were mostly absorbed into the Confederate government and the military, but they didn't really go away. Toward the end of the war, the Knights reemerged and began carrying out sabotage, kidnapping, and even murder to prevent the end of the Confederacy.
Yeah, fun bunch.
Bunch of winners.
Yeah, John Wilkes Booth, you may remember that name, was a member of the Knights from the earliest days. And the evidence is a bit sketchy, but some historians have written that the Knights of the Golden Circle did help Booth and his buddies in a plot first to kidnap Lincoln. There was actually a plot to do that.
Yeah.
And that actually was Booth's idea. He wasn't just everybody's favorite actor, but, you know, he was big time into the Southern cause. The kidnapping plot failed, but then Booth and company decided instead to assassinate Lincoln, which, of course, did not fail. Although their larger plan, this was part of the assassination of Lincoln was actually part of a bigger plan to decapitate the U.S. government by killing most of the cabinet. That larger plan did not go off as planned. Not at all.
They wounded the Secretary of War.
Yeah.
Sort of made a limp gesture toward assassinating the vice president, but it failed miserably and he wasn't even hurt.
Yeah, I think the guy who was sent over to his place, and remember, they didn't have a Secret Service in those days. He basically knocked on the guy's door.
He was staying in a hotel.
Yeah, and he was going to just basically shoot him when he answered the door, but he lost his nerve and then wound up not doing it.
Oh, yeah.
If I recall correctly. It's been a while since I read up on this.
But, I'm kind of obsessed with that. The story of the life of John Wilkes Booth, just if you're interested in some reading that vaguely relates to it, is like the plot of a Shakespeare play. It is some of the most weird, strange American history or just history out there you can pick up. It's very interesting.
Oh yeah,
messed up.
Interesting guy. did the Knights fade away? Well, some say no. There was a former Wall Street Journal reporter named Warren Gettler, co-wrote a book called Rebel Gold with an amateur historian and treasure hunter named Bob Brewer. And they argue in their book, and they're not alone, I don't think, in this, but they argue that the KJC actually continued to exist for decades after the Civil War and continued to bury underground gold and silver caches. Yeah.
So who was kicking in for this project? Who held the purse strings?
Yeah.
Something the outlaw Jesse James, for one. Jesse and his brother Frank, along with their buddies, the younger brothers, were members of Quantrell's Raiders during the Civil War. After the war ended in 1864, the James and younger brothers. So these are, just so we're clear, this is their last name was Younger. They are not the younger brothers of the James.
No, they were called Younger. Yes, indeed.
Their last name was Younger. So just to clear that up. So the James and younger brothers recruited former border raiders to help put together a gang of outlaws to use their knowledge of military tactics to rob Yankee banks, train and trains that were now in southern states.
Yeah.
The James Gang's first robbery is believed to have taken place in Liberty, Missouri on February 16th, 1866, when they robbed the Clay County Bank. The gang spent 10 years robbing and terrorizing Northern interests until they kind of had their Waterloo moment in Northfield, Minnesota in 1876.
Yeah, that didn't go so well. But during their little reign of terror, again, 10 years worth, the James Gang stole literally tons of gold and silver worth millions of dollars. And yet, none of the gang ever really lived lives of luxury. They were never homeless or starving. Don't get me wrong, but they weren't buying mansions either, mm-hmm. which they could have done that easily. What they appeared to spend really only represented a fraction of what they had stolen, which has caused some to wonder just what happened to all their loot. And there are, by the way, still people.
That's interesting. Now, I don't want to get us off on too high a topic, but no. I've read books about Jesse James, and I do know that he was just abysmal with his money. He really wanted to be a successful businessman and got involved in a number of just ridiculous ventures that ended up leaving him broke.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, however, was pretty successful. I believe he was a cobbler.
He wound up in the shoe business. Yeah.
And so that's maybe a little more of a point for Frank, in that I know that Frank didn't live a luxury life, but they did move constantly. And he's now moving houses to try and avoid suspicion. Probably took a lot of their cash up.
It could be. Yeah. I don't know. But I know that there are still people looking for James Gang gold in places like Oklahoma, Arkansas, and stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah. And some people have found some stuff that appears to maybe be James Gang gold, which might be Knights of the Golden Circle gold. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people believe Jesse James was a high ranking member of the Knights. Now, I don't know how well documented this is, but apparently one of his descendants did write a book about him in which she claimed that he was indeed in the Knights. Mm-hmm. And this would be in character because Frank and Jesse both hated the Yanks.
Oh, they couldn't stand him.
Oh, yeah, they hated him. They were very bitter about the South losing.
They were rebel guerrillas. Like, they go around and do this stuff.
Oh, they were hardcore. Yeah, they were. it's not like their only acts of violence is when they started robbing banks and trains. No, they've been killing and looting long before that. And again, they were very upset about the South losing the war. And I would think that those guys would be attracted to an organization that was dedicated to relitigating the Civil War, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I can see that.
So, was the James Gang actually kind of organized around this idea of refighting the war and booting money over towards this group of people who were dedicated to the cause rather than just enriching themselves? Interesting question. And I will admit, I don't know the answer to that. But
intimately, as Jesse James has been studied by historians, you'd think somebody would have dug up something.
Yeah, I know. So I don't know. But maybe given the way that he was glomming onto his gold and silver and everything, maybe he felt that it would be cast some disrepute on the cause if it was known that he was actually giving all this money to the Knights. You know, maybe he wanted them to look more like Knights in shining armor.
I don't know about all of his money, but I could see him contributing to that cause. He'd be into that.
Yeah, no, I think so. So it's just a question of how much loot did he donate to the cause.
Exactly. Right. So there were other sources of cash, though. Members were required to pay dues.
And there were quite a few members, by the way, of the Knights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And other branches of the organizations were robbing trains and banks as well. Just like the James dudes. The stashes of loot were buried near the homes of what were called sentinels, who were trusted members of the organization. Their job was to watch over treasure troves and make sure no one found them. It's been said that the job was multi-generational, with sentinels passing down the family's sacred charge to their children.
Ooh, this kind of sounds like a good plot for a movie, don't you think?
It's being a movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's like National Treasure, but totally racist.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm thinking about one where like a 20th century movie where this family of people living up in the mountains have kind of even forgotten the reason why they kill anybody that strays into their little patch of the woods, you know?
I gotcha.
They just do it nonetheless, you know? I mean, that sounds kind of fun. Although it's a little bit of the ripoff of the plot of Congo, but I don't want to get any further into that. But you see what
Congo
I'm saying?
Confederates instead of guerrillas.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get back to Bob Brewer. I mentioned him a few minutes back.
Yeah, I want to hear more about him.
Yeah, he was, as far as I know, he's still with us. He's an amateur historian and treasure hunter from Polk County, Arkansas. He's the guy who found that stash of silver coins in 1993, which may have been part of the James Gang loot. That's kind of the area where it's believed they buried all their loot was in that part of Arkansas and Oklahoma. This guy spent many years in all the hills around that area talking to the people who live up in these mountains and who have passed down a lot of the lore about the treasure and about all the treasure signs. Which is, by the way, if you're looking for some sort of book or whatever that shows you what all the treasure signs are and explains them all and everything, I have had no luck finding one of those, because all these treasure hunters tend to keep this stuff to themselves, believe it or not. They don't want somebody. Sense. Yeah, it does make sense. And so, but he's learned anyway. Bob Brewer, though, on the other hand, has gone out there and assembled a large body of knowledge about this stuff. And in the early 90s, he was contacted by a guy named Michael Griffith, who was a high school history teacher from Oklahoma. And Griffith was also very familiar with the Knights and their buried treasure. And he had been given photocopies of treasure maps, and he thought that they were legit, but he needed Brewer's help to decode the Knights' treasure signs that he'd found, in some of the areas that these maps described. Some of the signs he just didn't understand. So he wanted to join forces.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they wound up following the treasure trail to Johnson County, Oklahoma. Along a place called Delaware Creek, they found a series of signs that led a few hundred yards to a big oak tree with more symbols.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Bob Brewer broke out his metal detector, and he found an old Remington revolver buried just under the surface by a tree.
Mm.
Bob inferred that the pistol was a directional marker, with the barrel pointing towards something important. Bad, alas. The weather was deteriorating, and with a big snowstorm approaching, they had to leave.
Oh, I've heard this story before, right? Yeah. This sounds like a lot of lost treasure stories. So, of course, they were never able to find that spot again, right?
Yeah, this has a big Dutchman's mine energy to it.
It really does. Yeah, But it turns out they did find the spot. About a month later, they came back and to the spot where they'd found the revolver. These guys weren't, idiots like some of these other treasure hunters, I guess. The revolver, of course, was no longer there because they had taken it. Nice souvenir. Plus, they didn't want somebody else finding it and saying, hey, it points towards something. They didn't want that. So they took the revolver. But they had taken a compass bearing in the direction the gun was pointed before they moved it. And this compass bearing led them to a large tree along the creek bank. Again, Brewer once again whipped out his metal detector. It detected. And about a foot down, they found a glass jar by the tree that was filled with silver coins.
Ooh, nice.
So, yeah, dollar and half dollar denominations dated between 1812 and 1880. Nice little stash, really. And this was possibly a James Gang stash, since Jesse James wasn't killed until 1882. So maybe. And Bob Brewer, who's an expert on not just the James Gang, but on the Knights of the Golden Circle, he's pretty sure it was a Knight's cache as well, because based on the signs that he saw in the vicinity of where he found it, that's what he believes. So this is our first Knights of the Golden Circle treasure find that we're talking about. Not the first one, but the first one we're talking about. And of course, that comes with a big caveat, which is we're not sure about that it really was a Knight's stash, but there are a few others, though, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Saddle Ridge find.
Yeah.
That's the one that took place in the distant year of 2013.
Oh, God, that's a long time ago. Yeah.
It's so long ago.
Yeah.
That's when the Saddle Ridge Horde turned up.
Yeah.
And this one made the news, and no doubt most of you have probably heard about it.
I remember reading about it when it happened. Did you?
No, I don't.
You didn't? Oh, okay. No, I remember.
Maybe I didn't. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
It does sound a little familiar. So a couple known only as John and Mary were out walking their dog on their property in the Sierra Nevada mountains of California. And the precise location of their place is undisclosed, probably for good reason. They don't want a bunch of treasure hunters, trespassing, crawling all around the property.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
I'm also guessing John and Mary weren't their real names either.
But probably not. Yeah. I'm kind of surprised they didn't call themselves Mary and Joseph, but hey, whatever.
Oh, that would have been better.
Yeah.
They weren't in the Christmas spirit. All we know is that their property is in Gold Country, which is a large area on the west side of the Sierras between the Bay Area and Reno.
Yeah, it's kind of that spot on the west side of the mountains, but above the San Joaquin Valley. But it's a huge area. So And so they're out walking the dog, and they spot a rusty can sticking out of the ground. Yeah, and John grabs a stick and uses the stick to dig this can out of the ground. And picking it up, he notices that it's really heavy.
That's a good sign.
That's a great sign. Yeah.
It could just be full of dirt.
The lid of the can popped partially open and they could see a gold coin inside. And so, woohoo, I bet they thought, right? Wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's my dream, actually.
Yeah, right. Whoa.
Oh, God. So they take the can home and then sure enough, it's full of gold coins. They hit it and they came back with some digging tools. And they found another can just a few feet away from where that one had been buried with coins in it as well. Hmm. And they kept going back to this site, and eventually they bought themselves a metal detector and started using it. And in the end, they found a total of 8 cans of coin. Oh, 8 cans. I love it. God, I know. Wouldn't that be sweet? They have 1,427 coins in all, mostly $20 gold pieces. But there were also some $10 and $5 coins as well. Face value of the find was $27,980. That's in, if you assume that a $20 gold piece is worth $20,
Right.
But of course, the hoard was worth a hell of a lot more than that. It was appraised at around $10 million.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. There's some theories about how the coins got there, including, of course, the Knights of the Golden Circle. But we should probably at least give a hat tip to some of the other theories as to what the money was doing there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And there are some reasonable theories.
There's some reasonable theories. Yeah. So some people have offered that theory that the coins were from a 1901 heist at the U.S. Mint near San Francisco, or in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But this has been discounted. The mint's vault probably would have held bags containing coins from a single year with identical mint marks, but the hoard is much more diverse.
Yeah.
The hoard contains many coins that were heavily circulated, but the mint would have melted down and reissued those, not stored them.
Okay.
The hoard's coins don't have what experts call bag marks, which one would expect to see on coins that had been stored in a bag in a vault. None of the hoard of coins have dates after 1894, which would mean they were stored for 6 years at a minimum if they were in the mint when it was robbed.
Which, by the way, doesn't make a lot of sense because mints are supposed to make the money and then ship it the hell out, right? They're not supposed to just keep it sitting around for years and years and years.
You can imagine they probably have a bunch sitting in there.
Yeah, but that was one of the first theories that was thrown out, and it was ruled out pretty quickly, I think, for very good reasons.
What other theories do we have?
Well, there's just the rich dude theory. They were stashed there by somebody who then conveniently died. Maybe somebody this represented his savings, and he just would chuck some coins into the can. And when his can got full, he'd go bury it near the other cans. And then, unfortunately, alas, he forgot to tell somebody else. Or maybe he told his wife, but then he and his wife were killed in the same accident with a horse and buggy or something. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
You could imagine like some old prospector, he turns in his stash and then hides his stash out the mountains. But this is in gold country, so.
Yeah, it is. This is possible. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing about it is it does put you in a tough spot. If you're going to bury your gold somewhere on your property, let's say, for example, or you want to tell at least one other person, somebody who you know is not going to kill you and take the money for themselves, right? But ideally, you should have, maybe more people than that. It's kind of like, this is the problem. This is how lost gold becomes lost gold,
I don't know, though, man. I mean, what if you're just a crazy old prospector and you don't trust anybody?
It could be. It's tragic, though, for at least for him. And, for one thing, the guy like squirreled it all away in cans instead of spending it and enjoying it. Although, who knows? Maybe he had lots more where that came from, and he did spend quite a lot of it into it. Hopefully he did.
Who knows? Yeah.
But let's see. There's another theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Money laundering.
Yeah.
So, like, what if John and Mary had a bunch of cash from something, maybe something they didn't want you knowing about?
Yeah.
And they needed a way to account for it. They could have taken their cash to coin shows, bought up gold coins, which then they put into, pre-rusted, basically salvaged cans and buried for verisimilitude.
Verisimilitude,
and then quote unquote found.
Yeah.
The flaw in this idea, which is, it's pretty obvious when you think about it, is that a few of the coins are so rare and collectible that they'd be worth a fortune just by themselves.
Yeah.
One of the coins was a very rare $20 double eagle in uncirculated condition. This was valued at about $1 million. So if you were to go out and buy a coin like this with cash, there'd probably be a record of that. That would have attracted attention.
Yeah, there were half a dozen coins in that find that were considered, if not the best example of that particular coin in existence. the best or tied for the best. I mean, so yeah, this is a not just in its weight, for its weight in gold, but just for the collectability of the pieces that were in there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it does kind of rule out the money laundering theory, I think. So, well, here's another theory. And this is, of course, our favorite theory, because this is what we're talking about, the Knights of the Golden Circle, right? Yeah.
Right.
And so was this part of the KGC treasure? There were a few odd features about the site, which reminds us of the way they buried their treasure with signs and stuff like that nearby. There was an oddly shaped rock on the hillside above. And there was also an old can which had been tied to a tree nearby. And the can had been there so long that the tree had grown around it. And I've also heard references to other markers around the site, but this is undefined and vague. So, you know, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I've heard mention of these things. Once again, this one you're talking about, a lot of this stuff is like found on, say, websites that are run by treasure hunters and hobbyists and stuff like that. So they tend to be purposely vague, as I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to find precise information about the secret marking system of the Knights of the Golden Circle. Damn it.
Another thing about the Saddle Ridge Hoard is that it fits the Knights of the Golden Circle's modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
The eight cans. Another thing about the Saddle Ridge Hoard is that it fits the Knights of the Golden Circle's MO in that the eight cans were buried a short distance from each other. Mm-hmm. The thinking being that if one container was found, maybe at least some or all of the others would not be.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, these things were buried back in the days before metal detectors existed. So
yeah,
that might not be as lame a strategy as you might think.
Yeah, maybe not.
Dismissing it as a one-off and taking their golden. So that makes sense. It's smart.
Yeah, no, I mean, if I had a metal detector close at hand, I mean, even if I didn't, I'd still be digging up all around. But it's conceivable, though, if you don't have a metal detector to help out, then that you would be digging all over the place and you would still miss some of those cans, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So anyway, but yeah, apparently that's what they did with at least some of their stashes. But hey, look, I know that our listeners are probably getting impatient for a commercial right about now. So maybe we should take a quick break and let them listen to the commercial and then get back to them. So we'll be back.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we're back. And time for another interesting gold find. This is one of the more intriguing ones, actually, I think.
And, this one is interesting.
It is really interesting. And this is from the town of Baltimore. And it happened back in 1934. We mentioned at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Two boys in Baltimore were digging under an old house when they came across a stash of 3,558 gold coins buried in two copper pots. Boys' names were Henry Grob and Theodore Jones. And unfortunately for them, they kind of got ripped off on this one, because this was in 1934, after FDR and the gang had basically decreed that the private citizens could no longer have gold. So they had to turn it over to the government, and the government compensated them, but, you know, at, you know, not necessarily fair prices. So they couldn't, like, sell it to collectors, for example, who might have wanted some of these coins for their collectible value. And so, yeah, they kind of got screwed there. But still, they got thousands of dollars out of it, and which in 1934 was a pretty nice little find, right?
Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Not a bad day's work.
Yeah.
The coins were found buried in the basement of a house on South Eden Street in Baltimore. Prior to the Civil War, the house was owned by Captain John Madison, who, among other things, was a slave trader.
Mm-hmm.
Cool dude. Oh. Interestingly, the house was only about four blocks from John Wilkes Booth's house.
Mm.
After the war, the house was bought by one Andrew Salisbury, who was a Southern sympathizer. According to his daughter, speaking years after in the 1930s, Salisbury had the parlor of the home decorated with paintings of Confederate heroes.
Yeah.
Classy.
Yeah. Yeah. Baltimore was a hotbed of Confederate sympathies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a crazy place during that time. It was also a hotbed of these
sympathies. I know, right?
So yeah. It was Baltimore was wild back in like the 1850s, 1860s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be fascinating to go back in time. I'd pick my gun though.
Now, of course, watch your back.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that these guys were sympathizers, does this prove that Madison or Salisbury were members of the Knights? No. But it seems likely that they were. The KGC had over 3,000 members in Baltimore alone.
Right.
And Captain Madison had some reason to be bitter about all this abolitionist stuff because his slave ship, the Eliza Davidson, had been seized off the coast of Sierra Leone not so long before this. And of course, as we just documented, Salisbury had paintings of Confederates, you know, hanging in his house. And so I would really be surprised if these two were not members of the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Yeah. No, you know? I think you make a good case. That doesn't seem like there's absolute proof. But if anybody was going to be a member of this.
Yeah. Sounds like these guys.
He would be a part. He would be down for that conspiracy.
So yeah.
Did one of these two guys, Salisbury or Madison, bury the gold in the basement?
Yeah.
It would appear so. Because the coins were minted between 1834 and 1856. So the earliest they could have been buried there was when Madison owned the house.
Yeah.
But if Madison had stashed them there, wouldn't he have taken the money and moved out?
You would think so, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, it was a Knights of the Golden Circle stash, in which case he would have left them there for Salisbury to watch over. He could be the new sentinel, right?
That kind of makes sense. Salisbury put the coins. So that's another theory, right? This one doesn't work as well for me because he didn't move in until 1865.
Yeah.
That's 9 years after the most recent coin was minted. So it seems like Salisbury probably... Like if Salisbury had a gold stash, that it would have been it would have included just a few more recent coins when he buried.
Well, yeah, actually, and when you think about it, too, I mean, Salisbury was not that old when he moved into this house. And in his younger days, he started out basically from fairly humble origins and eventually towards the end was became fairly wealthy. So, but at that period of time when he was wealthier enough that he could afford to take and squirrel gold coins away in his basement, that would have been like that would have been well after 1856. So you'd expect most of the coins in the stash would have been actually minted past 1856 and not before. Right. And so that's another reason to wonder if Salisbury actually was the guy who put together this stash and buried it there.
Yeah, maybe.
And now he died young. That's Andrew Salisbury. He died at age 46 in 1873.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is.
I think that he must have known about this stash. Now, maybe he intended to tell his wife about the stash in the basement, but he just had not gotten around to it when he died because he didn't have any reason to suspect he was going to die at age 46.
Right, yeah.
or maybe he just never told her because he just expected that if he died, then the Knights would come around and collect the treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but that never happened, as we know, right?
Hmm.
So why did that not happen?
I mean, you have to wonder.
Yeah, no, this is one of the puzzles of the Baltimore find is like if it was Salisbury's money, then those coins should have been dated later. And if it was Madison's money, then he would have taken it with him when he moved. So you know what I'm saying? I like this one. It's a puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a puzzle. It's kind of breaking my brain trying to think about it. But
yeah.
I'm kind of with you. You got to wonder if maybe it was just a clerical error and that just.
Among the Knights, you mean? And the guys back at HQ who had a ledger where all this stuff was buried? It could have been.
You got to imagine. Yeah. Like, you know, with the original founding members dying off and with
or getting
paper records,
getting arrested, fires. Strung up, thrown in prison or God knows what.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. A civil war in the middle of it. The record keeping may not have been totally stellar. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where my end would go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I truly don't know. This is up for actually books have been written about the Knights. And so there's probably experts out. I don't know exactly how they kept track of all of their treasure. If they had one guy back at HQ who kept a ledger of every single stash and where it was and who was assigned to watch over it, et cetera, or maybe it was totally decentralized and out there among the many states where they had separate organizations, maybe those guys kept track of their stashes and the guys back at HQ didn't really know. Mm. I don't know. So it could be, if that was the case, and maybe the guy who was in charge of keeping track of the knight's treasure stashes in Maryland got run over by a horse and buggy or something, you know? And then, yeah, you know, it could be something like that, so, which would mean, if that's the case, and there might be some other stashes in that area that have not been found.
Yeah.
You know,
it's possible.
Yeah.
If I was living in the Baltimore area and I knew for a fact or could find out that some old Southerner slave trader or Confederate official or whatever had owned my house in the past, I'd go rooting around in the basement.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think that'd be worth your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And probably, you know, especially after the advent of metal detectors, probably a lot of people in the town of Maryland, the town of Baltimore, who lived in some old house that dated back to the Civil War, just probably did get a metal detector and go down to their basement and poke around.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you? Of course, it's possible the coins were put there by some later owner, but I don't think so. The dates on the coins, again, suggest that this did not happen.
It's also possible that it was put there. I mean, that even, you know, for example, Madison put them there for whatever reason and forgot about them.
unless something happened, maybe he buried them and then got a knock on the head and had amnesia, maybe something like that. Or maybe he put them there and that he felt that they were so well hidden.
That's what I was thinking.
That he thought, you know, that's fine. I'll just leave them where they're at and I'll come back and get them at some later date, you know, when I need the money. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was it. Although I personally wouldn't be able to sleep at night knowing that my vast treasure hoard was buried in somebody else's basement and they might stumble across it. That would drive me insane. I mean, you know, I would not be that confident in my hiding skills that the other guy wouldn't find it. Yeah. Hey, so yeah.
All right, does that lead us up to the theory section, or do we got more to go?
Kind of. Now there was one that I was going to talk about. I was just out there trolling around the internet looking for, you know, finds on say James Gang Gold and stuff, and I came across some April Fool's joke in some newspaper called the Fillmore County Journal in Minnesota, which reported a find of gold bars.
This one I recall.
Yeah. In a park near Northfield, Minnesota, a park that the James Gang had supposedly camped out near, although it was not a park at that time. It was somebody's farm. Mm-hmm. Three gold bars weighing 16 pounds total. But it did turn out to be an April Fool's joke. Jerks.
Jerks.
Oh, well. So there it is. That's the end of it. And of course, we could go through and list every single potential gold find out there. We just wanted to give you a representative sample of these things. And how many more are out there is what we all want to know, right? And
That could be a lot.
There could be
just a few. I don't know.
You know, but there is that question though: did the Knights treasure really exist? Maybe none of these finds actually were related to the Knights at all.
Yeah, although that's possible.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. None of them, you know, had, you know, a Knights of the Golden Circle insignia on them.
No, they didn't do it that way. But and so if it did exist there, it seems to me there are still caches of gold and silver buried all over the place. Don't you think? I mean,
I think it's possible.
I do too. I think
it's totally possible.
Grab your shovel and your metal detector and let's go out and start digging. Yeah. Well, I guess it's time for some theories then. I mean,
let's do it.
Yeah. So the Knights of the Golden Circle treasure. This would be our first one. It existed, but it's mainly gone because mostly the Sentinels, remember those guys, whether maybe their kids or their grandkids, at some point realized, hey, you know, we haven't heard from HQ in decades. The KGC has just kind of gone away. And so at that point, they just decided to just take that stash of treasure they were watching over and keep it for themselves.
This is the theory I subscribe to.
That is tempting. You would think that would happen, huh?
Yeah. You know? How could you not be like, oh man, I'm on some hard times, right? Maybe it's the depression, right? Or whatever. Any of the economic crises of the late 19th century, be like, ah, I tell you what, I don't know about this stuff grandpa was into with these Confederate Knights of the Golden Army or whatever. And I'm just going to take this and feed my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I would probably do is like, at some point I probably would move it. Like, so it's buried in this spot. I would dig it all up and move it to another place that only I knew of. And then if the Knights did show up and looking for it, I would just say, hey, you know, there were a lot of people poking around that area where it was buried. And I just got so worried about it, I finally just moved it. Sorry, I forgot this stuff. Or maybe you could even say that. Hey, I sent you guys a letter. Didn't you get it?
I sent you guys a letter.
Maybe something like that.
Code.
And then if they don't show up,
didn't reach the clubhouse?
Yeah, 10 years or so goes by and they don't show up, you know, then... You know, then, what the hell? Go ahead, spend it.
Right.
This is, Yeah, this gives me an idea for another plot of a movie, by the way. You know, the guy spent the money, and then all of a sudden somebody from the Knights shows up and says, "Hey, where's the gold?" So, okay.
Another theory is that the Knights of the Golden Circle leadership came and collected the stashes for legitimate purposes or whatever.
By their lights, their own, like buying weaponry and trying to destabilize the government of Guatemala or something like that. I don't know.
But, yeah, right. Yeah.
Or the government established
or whatever.
Yeah.
They
took them for their own purposes. They figured, hey, the cause is dead. Let's as well go ahead and collect this stuff and, spend it, Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I also, one thing to keep in mind is we don't know how vast the KGC's treasure was.
Yeah.
It may not have been the vast treasure that I think of it as in my mind. Like when I read your script, I'm picturing, the equivalent of a $1 billion in today's money strewn across the nation, but it might not
probably
have really
not
been all that much.
It might not have been, and we'll get into this. There's another theory that I have. I sort of put this towards the back of it, but I do think that, even if it was not as big as everybody thinks it is, there's still probably some nice little stashes out there that are really actually worth some money these days, just because of the collectability of the coins that are in those boxes or jars or cans or whatever, if they're still out there. But I considered a possibility, and this kind of ties in with what you're saying, it's just like, we don't know how big the treasure really is. And I consider the theory that maybe the Knights of the Golden Circle was a bit of a scam. You know, it's like their goals were, in my opinion, were kind of unrealistic for the most part. Although when you look at them, they definitely had appeal. Maybe they were designed to appeal to a certain kind of person, people with money, and potential contributors, but they never really came anywhere close to executing or accomplishing most of their more grandiose goals.
Right.
I mean, as far as doing stuff like murdering people and intimidating people and stuff like that, they were okay at that, Yeah. But, as far as establishing a new empire, a slaveholding empire, in the Caribbean and Mexico, et cetera. No, and they didn't come even remotely close to doing
that. Well, yeah. It kind of reminds me of, and actually the story of Jesse James kind of reminds me a little of this too, of the way that the mafia was formed.
Yeah.
In that, it originally grew out of a group of noblemen who had basically decided to fight the Moorish occupation of Sicily with any means necessary, even through truly corrupt means, with the arguably noble goal of restoring Christendom and local control of the island. But once that happened, what were the mafia, the Knights of the Mafia, or whatever they were called, supposed to do with themselves? Well, they just kept going.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you got this really nice organization that you built. You should use it for something.
Money coming in. You've got, respect, control, a secret network. Were you just going to let that all go to waste because they kicked the Umayyads off the island?
Yeah.
No. And I kind of feel like the KGC may have dabbled in that a little bit, just like Jesse James basically ultimately ended up being, he started out as a guerrilla rebel who wouldn't put down his weapons. He fought with, I think they called them the Gray Ghosts, who were Confederates who refused to surrender even after Jefferson Davis had. Yeah. Well, he ended up just being a criminal.
Yeah. That's utterly plausible. And the same with the KGC. I mean, they were still raking in all kinds of contributions. They're still going out there and getting everybody sort of all whipped up with their ideas for the South will rise again and we need your money to make it happen, and maybe a lot of that, instead of going into stashes in the ground, I mean, of course, a lot of it might have, but maybe a lot of it just went straight into the bank and eventually was absconded with, various people took off for Brazil with this cash and stuff.
I'm glad we're on the same page about that.
Yeah,
I
it could
have a
be.
Feeling that's what they were up to.
Yeah, it could be. Although at the same time, I mean, I guess if you want to take the money instead and make it, and actually bury it somewhere. And actually, that would make sense in a sense, too, because even if you're taking all this money in and you're planning on cheating all the contributors and not actually doing anything with the money besides spending it on yourself, you still got to keep it somewhere. And maybe you don't trust the banks because, after all, you are, in the eyes of some people anyway, a criminal. And maybe, your bank account could be seized. So maybe you would want to bury it somewhere.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, look, man, that's what, to this day, there will be a farmer in Colombia deciding to dig a fence post and find a giant stack of moldy, saran-wrapped American bills leftover from the Escobar era.
From Pablo? Yeah,
sometimes it's from Pablo himself, sometimes it's his associates.
They
did not want to put that money in the bank. That was a way to get it lost, so they hung on to it.
Yeah.
And that led them to do some weird stuff with it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were such morons. I mean, oh my God, those guys just went and buried that stuff right in the ground. They could have found like Tupperware boxes or something to put it in, you know, and put some moisture absorbent in there with it, you know. No. When they dug up a lot of that stuff, it was useless. You know?
It totally was. Well, yeah. Useless, and you can't trade it in for anything. But I think a lot of those guys, they may have been idiots, but I think they also were not intending to leave it there for as long as they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it could be. But anyway, that poor sad for poor Pablo. But on the other hand, Pablo was kind of a psychopath, so screw him.
Yeah, not a lot of sympathy for Pablo Escobar.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah. Anyway, that's about it. That's about. I mean, if this story is actually a pretty huge story, if you wanted to learn more about it, there are books written about it, about mm-hmm. the treasure and about the James Gang treasure and about the knights. Mm-hmm. And there's all books just about the knights themselves. I don't even talk about the treasure so much, but just about the history of the organization. It's rather fascinating, to be honest.
Yeah, it is.
It is. It's really quite interesting. and of course, just for you conspiracy theorists who are thinking, oh, I bet they're still around today. No, they're not. To the best of my knowledge, at least. I don't think so.
I haven't heard, not even conspiracy theorists talking about that.
No. And so don't go out and start any new conspiracy theories, please.
We've got enough.
Yeah.
There's plenty. Pick one that's already there, like lizard people. Do the reptilian.
I like that one. Yeah. The hollow earth is a good one, you know, and it makes sense. You know, actually, I did some back of the envelope calculations just yesterday, and I figured out if the earth wasn't hollow, we would all weigh a lot more because of gravity.
That's true.
Well, there you go. Proof.
Joe's a noted physicist.
Oh, I know everything. No, not really. But okay. I'm making it all up, right? But anyway, let's. I guess we should wrap this up. We've wasted enough of these nice people's time, don't you think? Yeah, we have.
I hope it's not a waste of their time.
No. So as always, of course, you know, stay tuned and listen to the lovely Tess tell you all about how to find us via email and social media.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the usual plea, to leave us a good rating and a review.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah,
do that
please
one.
Do. Please do.
It's
do
awesome.
That. We like that. We like that a lot. I think that covers it.
I think that's everything. Yeah, just please leave us a rating and review. Yeah. It's not only just that it makes us feel good, which it does. It helps other people find out about the show.
Absolutely.
Which helps us keep doing it and grows our community. And that's also some of the ways that we find stories and things. So it makes it a better podcast when we have, more people devoted to helping us do, you know, crowdsource information, story ideas. So it's in your interest to please leave us that rating and review. We'd really be grateful.
Mm-hmm. By the way, as you just said, story ideas. We're always looking for those. If you have any good, fascinating stories you want us to talk about, then feel free to shoot us an email. I'm not promising anything, but we'll at least give it consideration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. All right. Anyway, until next week, ta-ta.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.